Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
So there was a new policy released by Starbucks yesterday that I'm sure is to cause quite a controversy among some. According to that policy, and this story comes from UPI, according to that policy, everyone is considered a customer and purchases are not required to use Starbucks cafes, including their restrooms.
So I'm a customer of Starbucks right now. I'm not in the store. I'm not drinking one of their coffees. I am not using their bathroom. I'm not doing anything that has to do with Starbucks, but I am a customer. That's nice.
Well, right now you are not a customer.
Okay.
Let's continue on. And okay. The article explains why this new policy came about.
Oh, I know why the new policy came about. I'm happy to explain that
too. I'm fairly certain you know, but there might be somebody listening that has not heard.
Sure.
By, you know, some weird, I don't know if it's miracle, but, you know, by some chance, you know, there's always a story that slips by somebody. UPI says the policy change comes a month after a Philadelphia Starbucks manager called police about two black men who were sitting inside the restaurant waiting on a friend who had not yet ordered. An arrest video sparked a nationwide outcry, including days of protest in Philadelphia. The city police commissioner apologized, and the Starbucks CEO, Kevin Johnson, called the arrest reprehensible. Afterwards, the company announced that all U.S. stores would be closed on the afternoon of May 29th to conduct racial bias training.
I am of the opinion that a business should be able to treat you unjustly inside their business if that's what they wish to do, and that you have a choice as to whether or not to go back. I can see why.
I think they should be more transparent. If they're going to treat people unjustly,
sure.
You know, put out a sign that says, we don't serve anybody with red hair. We don't serve people that wear this color sneakers. We don't serve people with this color skin. We don't serve people that
tables.
Have their hair cut this particular way.
Table.
And then I will know not to go shop there because I don't want bigots getting my money.
I'm with you. But how about a sign that says tables and bathrooms for paying customers? I mean, that is almost an unwritten rule.
But there are a lot of places that do have those signs.
Yeah, but you really shouldn't have to have that sign.
But again, here comes the question of if I show up early, I'm supposed to meet a friend and I show up early, do I stand in the parking lot or is the parking lot reserved only for people that have immediately placed an order?
I don't think that people believe that. Do you believe that there is such a thing as an unwritten contract by entering a business? Because I do. When I go into a business and I sit down at a table and I order and the waitress brings me things and then I eat them, I believe I have to pay for those things.
I would say if a business asks you to leave and you continue to stay or argue, you give them a warning, you're going to call the police. And if they don't leave, you call the police. It's not a fine. It's you've been told to leave and I've asked you a second time. Now I'm calling the police.
All right, so let me sort of play devil's advocate here, which is what I've largely been doing with Mark. So let's say that I walk into that Applebee's and they say...
Why has it got to be Applebee's? They're probably advertising during our breaks.
Well, I can't think of any other... All right, Chili's.
All right.
Because we've got one of those in Keene, too. I'm just thinking of sit-down restaurants where you walk in and there's a hostess that says, how many in your party? I walk in and they say, how many in your party? And I say, I think there's going to be three or four. I'm waiting on a couple of people. Can they then, if my friends don't arrive in 47 seconds, say, excuse me, sir, you need to leave. Well, I'm waiting on the rest of my party, but you need to leave now. And then I get arrested because I showed up 2 minutes before my friends did?
Absolutely. They can refuse to give you service. Like the sign says on the door, and they can do it for any reason. They don't have to give a reason. They can say, we refuse service, now we're asking you to leave.
Decaffeinated coffee is made either with formaldehyde, or there is a patented water decaffeinated process.
Okay, so they wash the caffeine away?
Yeah, they wash it away.
Okay.
It's probably terrible for the environment, and God knows, but it says water instead of the unwritten formaldehyde, which is, of course, important to people that... don't know
right.
much about science. Go ahead.
So jumping back into the article here from UPI, the new policy at Starbucks which was sent via a letter to employees again on Saturday, said, quote, any person who enters our spaces, including patios, cafes, and restrooms, regardless of whether they make a purchase, is considered a customer.
Okay. So they're like a park, only they serve coffee.
Yes.
So you just show up and you're a customer.
That's apparently what the new policy says.
Well, it gives a guideline to their managers that should help to solve these problems in the future. I think it's an unfortunate circumstance. I suspect that racial bias is somehow involved because, well,
right.
It's difficult not to have that. However, I find that I'm frustrated with the notion that you could just if there's a certain amount of people in this world, a certain percentage of people in this world, that if you give them the race card to play, they'll play it every time.
When I lived in San Antonio before I moved to New Hampshire, I was kind of a cheapskate because I didn't want to pay for internet. But part of that was, you know, I wasn't, you know, necessarily wanting to spend money on internet. There was a McDonald's like half a mile away. I would just go to the McDonald's and sometimes order a glass of, you know, a cup of tea, and you get free refills. And I'd just keep going, getting free refills, but I'd sit there for several hours just using the internet. I was a paying customer.
Yeah, I think that's it's legit.
I mean, I milked that cup of tea as long as I could.
It's a, I mean, that's, to me, that's part fulfilling the social contract as far as it goes. You're walking the line, but, you know, they got bathrooms, they've got fountain tea, they've got seats, as long as you're not keeping somebody
out. They've got plugs.
Yep. If somebody, so for instance, in the server industry, we're talking about turning tables.
Right.
Right? So if you're busy, you don't want people sitting and keeping the table occupied the whole time. That's a real pain. And if you're a server and you have to keep going back and filling their beverages while they chat for 3 hours.
Right.
That too is a bit of a pain.
Yes.
That table of customers, it's 9:30 and you close at 9. You're putting you're vacuuming the floor. They still won't get out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got all those things. Yeah, they suck.
Well, what's the, and I forget.
Is it Juan Valdez?
Yeah, I was going to ask, what's that coffee where the logo is the donkey with the burlap sack?
I think that's just the Colombian brand for coffee generally, for their coffee.
Okay.
Whatever. They're trying to say the Colombian coffee is the best coffee. I don't know if that's the case.
Well, they do mix cocaine into it, so I think it is the best coffee.
Well, somebody's getting shot tonight.
I don't know. I don't drink coffee.
Okay, yeah.
Or do cocaine.
Well, I suppose I'll just
have to. But I wonder, would cocaine coffee actually be any good?
That's what they basically say that Starbucks is, because it's extra high caffeine content. It gets you kind of hooked. But I stopped drinking Starbucks after I had basically a nervous breakdown somewhere in 2000. And
then you called Ian some words that can't be repeated on the radio?
Oh, that's happened multiple times. I'll probably do that before the evening's over. The mics just won't be on. But, you know, recently made a deal with my son that if he hears me say one of several words, and he doesn't know what they all are, but if he hears them, he'll figure it out, that I give him $1. So
okay.
I now have a cussing jar, effectively, and he will make sure I pay.
And I'm fairly certain he will make use of Urban Dictionary to figure out what the words are that Daddy is saying.
I hope he doesn't. I don't want him to learn any new ones. Many people in America, conservatives, libertarians, believe that somehow money is a representation of good deeds, of a life well lived, of virtue. And to some extent, I believe this, that if you like,
I look confused because I'm not sure you were exactly clear in what you were intending to say there.
Right, so I'm going to go on to say a bit more about it.
Okay.
A life well lived, a series of good decisions generally will result in, this is my belief, more money in your pocket than a series of bad decisions.
Okay, so the acquisition. Because when you first said money represents, well, yep. Money in and of itself doesn't necessarily represent
the possession
anything
of money?
Other, yeah, the acquisition. I think is what you intend to mean.
Right. And I still, I've read this article. I still don't believe what these seething liberals say, but I think that it's important to read things that you don't necessarily agree with.
So where's this come from? Because I'm just curious if you're calling them seething liberals because they offer an opinion that you disagree with, or if they are self-described liberals.
PBS.org.
Okay.
They are not self-described liberals, but they are. A series of bad decisions took me to prison, right, where I figured out relatively quickly that good decisions are helpful for living a good life, and bad decisions are helpful for living a bad life. And then when I got out, I was determined to make as many good decisions as I could, and I realized it took a while. You got to stack these decisions up over time, and yeah, you know, it's frustrating when things don't return quite as quickly as you'd like them to be, and sometimes you make a gamble and you fail. Sometimes you take a risk and it doesn't work out. But this whole luck has more importance? I don't know whether I believe it. Going on with the author's stuff, it's why I adopted a motto soon after my journalism career kicked off. Oh, that's why you're not rich, you're a journalist. That I tried to capture the perception, there is no big time. That is, it's remarkable how many at the top are, well, unremarkable. So I figured luck had to play a lead role in their ascension. I've never had occasion to change my mind. I've met a lot of people at the tops of their careers, and this person's an a-hole.
There are a lot of people at the tops of their careers that are complete a-holes.
I've met a lot of people who are incredibly remarkable people, and they don't tend to get to the top by being ordinary and unremarkable. I just disagree with that assertion. If you don't believe that the people at the tops of their careers are remarkable, it's because you are remarkable, and you have surrounded yourself with remarkable people.
Before we continue, there have been other people that have run computer models that show that if all of the wealth were redistributed, that it would not be too terribly long before, I think it was 97% of the wealth was being controlled by like 10% of the people.
It doesn't surprise me. If at any activity, people, there's going to be sort of a bell curve, right? Like some people are going to be average at doing things, people are going to be above average at doing things, and people are going to be below average at doing things.
Right. And,
you know, if money's important, maybe it should be in the hands of people who are good at managing it.
Right. And, you know, there are some people that they just have a tendency to, I'm not going to say always make bad decisions, because a bad decision is relative.
Well, okay. You cannot say that, but I'll go ahead and say it. I know plenty of people, it seems like they try to make bad decisions, that they sit there, they smoke a cigarette while thinking about ways to make more new bad decisions, and then they go out and they do them.
I would agree that, you know, smoking cigarettes, bad decision. What I was thinking in my mind was the people that, oh, I got this big giant tax refund. I'm going to go spend all the money on a sound system and rims for my car.
The most common explanation is that the wealthy have earned it, whether by IQ, get this, whether by IQ or intelligence or talent.
But oh, you think that they're being repetitive?
Yes.
They're not, because it has been proven that IQ and intelligence are not necessarily the same thing.
No, IQ is a rating of some a form of intelligence. However, right, the 9 forms of intelligence that are out there, some of them go by other names. So, like, when you're talking about sort of your body intelligence, your body knowing where it is in space and being able to perform specific acts, we call that athleticism.
Right.
Right? So we don't, I mean, is athleticism a form of intelligence? I'm willing to have that debate. In fact, I'll probably come down.
I'd say it's probably talent.
It's a talent, certainly. And I'm willing to call it.
Plus, you do have to have some intelligence, because, you know, you could have a really good athlete that is really good at basketball and then say, oh, you're a really good basketball player. We want you to go play baseball. And then they wind up not doing so well. Looking at you, Michael Jordan. Well, still a better baseball player than I'll ever be.
Yeah, he was a great athlete and certainly didn't have the time to go back and relearn all of that other stuff.
Are these business journals or these business podcasts?
Many
or
times
is it just
successful,
you know, like Facebook
people,
groups that you're in.
It's journalists reporting on things. It's luck is being attributed more and more often. The one guy from one of the early investors in Amazon. You know, there's just this sort of group of people out there that appear to be setting up a dynamic where we're fed the idea that luck is the big determining factor in success. And what I would propose is that this is a conspiracy, whether laid out or subconscious, a conspiracy to undermine hard work and dedication in the American marketplace so that we see more equity because people who would be otherwise successful choose not to do it because they don't want to play into a game where luck is the major determining factor. So what we will see is equal misery for everyone because the hard workers don't go out and do it. And that's what I'm trying to sort of fight against, is that...
So do you think some of these people might be pushing for universal basic income?
Everything. These are the sorts, right? They're not liberals in necessarily what they're stating in their articles, but they are just sort of in the way they talk about things. Ladies and gentlemen, I am a big believer that hard work and good decisions will result in you having a much better life than otherwise.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
Hear this article from PBS. I get what they're saying. They're saying that, for instance, what they list off here, different sorts of talents and these sorts of things are in a meritocracy, that they're evenly distributed. Not evenly distributed, but distributed along a bell curve. So, you know, those that let's see, here's the list: talent, intelligence, skills, smartness, efforts, willfulness, hard work, and risk taking. That these things would be distributed along a bell curve of some sort amongst the population, right?
Right. So, you know, I'm thinking here that as they're talking about, you know, like distributing stuff. And if everybody were to make the, you know, equally good or bad or wise choices, etc., then everybody would wind up having the same outcome or something, because there are people that believe that.
I'm defining success as having, you know, owning your own home at some point, you know, in...
Not everybody wants to own a home, but okay, that's how you're defining success.
Right. You know, having not, you know, moving forward, right? Like having more wealth than you did 10 years ago, these kinds of things. Not being indebted, that's what I'm calling success. What they're calling success is the top 1% of holders of wealth in the world. And, you know, those are a fair group to just go ahead and disparage all the time because, you know, they're not going to fight back. They can't fight back, and there's not enough of them to fight back. So, you know, whatever. If they're going to say that people are in the top 1% because they're lucky, well, probably half of them are there because they were born there. So you can't call that anything but luck.
Luck.
Right. And the other half, sure, I'm sure that some business people made some business decisions that had luck as a factor. And therefore, if you're saying half of the reason that half of the people are in the top 1% is luck, then all luck has to do is be a small factor in every other decision, and then therefore everybody is there largely because of luck.
Right.
So I suppose I understand where they're coming from with their little computer model or whatever, but I don't want anybody to walk away from this thinking that you can't have a better life by stringing good decisions to better to, together.
Kansas is easy to make fun of, and one of the reasons I do believe is our last governor, Sam Brownback, wanted to make Kansas a test state for the whole trickle-down economy, you know, give businesses tax breaks. And you know what? We ended up literally at the bottom of the list in terms of how well we were doing financially at the end of his time in office. And
how
long was he in office? He would have been 8 years, but it was 6 years because now Trump has him in some position doing something.
He got a promotion.
I'm sorry. Yeah, he got a promotion. So, you know, it is easy to make fun of Kansas. But on the other hand, we do have some, this next election, we're really going to have some good people on both sides. And they're going to be I promise. I don't think there's any dogs.
Well, see?
So
Sam, it's proven that you will not have a good candidate then.
Sam Brownback is apparently the United States Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom.
Okay. Oh, there you go.
I did not even know that was a thing.
A 25-year-old man faces a felony charge after posing as a high school.
No, I seriously doubt he posed as a high school.
I love CBSLocal.com. As posing as a high school at Dallas ISD High School. And are these written by a computer? I think they have to be. And even joined the school's basketball team. Sydney Galstrap,
how are you doing, my fellow kids?
Was arrested on a charge of tampering with government records, a felony, after he was enrolled as a student at Hillcrest High School, claiming to be a displaced Hurricane Harvey evacuee. The district confirmed he also played at the school's basketball team during the school year. Dallas ISD said it is promising to revisit its policies about situations like welcoming hurricane victims into the school district. This is a unique situation that shows us areas we need to make to take another look at when we open our doors to students in these situations, said the district. Safety is always our top priority, and we're reviewing our policies to strengthen district efforts while still helping those who are in need. So this guy did it. Right? Every movie in the 80s, it seems like, focused on something like this. Going back to high school and finally doing it properly. You said you had another story for me. What was that?
The election in Venezuela.
Oh, God. I care so little. All right.
I keep forgetting that you and I and Ian don't necessarily... have the same view on Venezuela. Me and Ian are fascinated.
Yeah, Ian loves to talk about Venezuela.
Slow train wreck that is the Venezuelan economy. Well, they had an election today.
I'd like to point out that
the Miami Herald.
Yeah, there's an election that went on. I'd like to point out that the socialists don't care about this. They say Venezuela, if the first thing they're going to say is state capitalism, right? State capitalism is the new buzzword for saying whatever socialist government that I don't like historically that implemented all the things that I believe in, that isn't the thing that I believe in. So libertarians live in a world where we've never really gotten to implement what we want to implement.
Correct.
Socialists kind of live in the same world.
I'm not saying that staying home is the best way to combat a, out of control government. But at the same time, when everything about the election is rigged, then I don't know if I can necessarily trust the results, even if turnout was somewhere higher than 17%.
Yeah.
Let me continue with the article. They say, even though official results have not been released, few believe that Maduro's two rivals, Henry Falcón, the former governor of Lara State, and Javier Butucci, an evangelical pastor, stood a chance. While some polls showed either man could have beaten the deeply unpopular Maduro, given normal turnout, an opposition boycott destroyed that hope, according to someone from a polling
elections.
Firm.
So I want to ask the listener, is there any effectiveness to boycotting an election? Oftentimes, my listeners, many people will listen to the show, and they'll say that voting is immoral. They'll say that they're boycotting election. They'll have a variety of reasons. And I'd love to hear somebody call in and make that point, because I don't get it.
As far as the concept of not voting, abstaining from a vote, I've heard the perspective that, especially it applies, I would think, in the Venezuela situation, by not voting, it's a vote of no confidence in the system.
So
that they no longer are confident that democracy in their country is viable from the standpoint of Maduro is going to rig the election either way. So if 80% of the people show up, Maduro wins anyway, he can say the people have spoken. But by not showing up, he can no longer say the people have chosen me to be their president.
I bet he does.
The people obviously did not. So, he will. And every president always makes that claim, right?
Right.
No matter, they make the claim here, but it's not accurate to say the people unanimously want this president to do that.
But even in municipal elections, and I recall, what was it, like 6-7 years ago, there was a mayoral election in San Antonio where I was living at the time. Voter turnout was 7%. The mayor got reelected with 80% of the vote. And the headlines weren't voter turnout incredibly low, vote of no confidence. No, no, no. The headlines were mayor reelected in a landslide mandate for the mayor.
Which the other thing you have to consider, state-run media, that's going to be the headline either way.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.